What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another hour of the Andy Slater Show, and welcome to Friday. Welcome to the weekend. Friday, April 4th, 2025, to be exact. I always like pointing out the date, like the exact date at the beginning of every show. That's because I don't want anyone to ever think, oh, this is a repeat. And sometimes when the hour starts, you hear portions of this program may be pre-recorded. And look, sometimes portions are, and that's not just my show, that's a lot of shows. But you know, on this show, I'm always all about
honesty.
Other shows, they make it look like it's live. Every single minute of it is live. And that's not just radio, that's television too. You could be watching any network. I feel like if I name a network, I gotta name multiple networks. Because if you just name one network, then people will be like, oh, we're getting into politics now. And you know what? It shouldn't be that way. It should just be news. But I'll just name a few networks. If you watch CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, if you watch any news channel at night, they got a program. Okay, we're bringing on this person, or the host is talking. A lot of it is live, but not all of it is live. Some of it's pre-recorded to make it sound and look like it's live. That's just how TV and radio works. The internet is pretty much live, not always live. I think even Luke came on a couple of Luke Tuesdays ago. And I said, man, you're on a whole lot. I see your show popping up, the podcast, on all of the time. And he said, well, Slater, you know, I do it live, and then it replays all of the time at all different hours because not everybody is able to tune in at a certain time. And, I mean, I understand that, but I didn't know that's exactly what he was doing, and I don't watch every single episode, just like you guys don't tune in every single minute of every day that I'm here on the airwaves. I know a lot of you tune in a lot, and trust me, I do very much appreciate that. There are certain things that I will tune into, not necessarily programs, but something I want to see or hear all the time, but we get busy. We got other things in life. Look, today is a Friday. Maybe you're on your way home right now, and I don't know what you got planned this weekend. Whatever it is, go enjoy it. Go have fun. I'm not even sure what my plan is for this weekend, because I sent out a tweet maybe around 11 o'clock this morning. I put it up on my Instagram story as well. I have a future wager on this girl to win a tennis tournament in Bogota. I put $1,700 on the future, and it pays $103,000. I got her at 60-1. She plays tonight. If she wins tonight, she's in the semifinal tomorrow, and the final is on Sunday. So I'm thinking, just like I said on social media, if she does win tonight, and I hope she does, of course I do, I got 103,000 reasons I hope she wins. If she wins tonight, and she's just a small underdog tonight, I have to go watch that semifinal match. Because if I've got a 60-1 shot in a semifinal, where if you win that, you're in the final. I got to be there. And the tournament is in Bogota. So I don't know what my plan is going to be for this weekend. I know what I want my plan to be. Not that I'm a huge fan of Bogota, but you know where Bogota is. It's in
Colombia!
So you better believe I will be there tomorrow, probably middle of the afternoon. I got to watch that match in person. She's got to win tonight, though. So if you want to follow it, if you want to see what I'm talking about, just go to my social media, go to my IG story, go to my Twitter feed, and you'll see the details. I don't want to get too much into it because some of you don't care. And at this point, you're like, come on, Slater. Like, I'm here to know what's going on. I want to know what you're doing and what's up, but I want to hear other things too. And I'm going to get to those. Some of you are into the Final Four. I never really got into the NCAA tournament this year. Here I am a couple of weeks ago. Okay, March Madness. We got all these games. But nothing really exciting happened. We just had a lot of games, and that was pretty much it. Tomorrow night, Florida taking on Auburn, SEC showdown. And then Duke and Houston. The winner plays for the national championship on Monday night. What else do we have going on? The Florida Panthers, they're going to be in action without Alexander Barkov. Barkov missed the last game they played. That was in Toronto. Paul Maurice said this morning that Barkov is day-to-day, but he's out this weekend. So if you're declaring Barkov out for the weekend, sounds like more of something that should be like, I don't know how you would say it, week to week or 3 days to 3 days, day to day, you're already claiming he's out for the weekend. I understand what Paul Maurice is saying. I'm just getting technical because Paul Maurice and a lot of other coaches and managers, they always say day to day. And then all the fans start believing them, and then you get a report that a player's going to be out 3 weeks. Oh, but the coach said day-to-day. You can never believe the coach. The coach does not have to be honest about that. Maybe that's why the coach isn't on this show. Because to come on this show, you know, again, you got to be all about
honesty.
So will Barkov really be day-to-day? Will he only miss this weekend and come back next week? The Panthers need Barkov. They're already so banged up. Kachuk out. Ekblad, he's out, not because he's injured. I mean, maybe his feelings are hurt, but he's serving a suspension. And he will still be suspended for the first two games of the Stanley Cup playoffs as well. That's how suspension should work. If you are suspended in the regular season, 20 games, and you got 18 left, okay, the first two playoff games, you're suspended. You can't play. Major League Baseball, like, what are they doing? You got the whole substance abuse, PED, suspension stuff where you're suspended for 80 games. But when you get suspended in Major League Baseball for PEDs or whatever it is you want to call it, because there's always an excuse, you're not eligible for the postseason. So like the guy in the Braves, I mean, the Marlins are going to be playing the Braves now without Jurickson Profar. He gets suspended for 80 games, and that's not the reason Atlanta stinks, but he gets suspended for 80 games. He can come back after those 80 games. And this just happened a couple of games into the season. So basically, he's suspended 80 games. Then he gets to play 80 games. And then if the Braves make the postseason, I know right now it looks like they're not, but it's so early. If they make the postseason, he's not allowed to play. So you're out 80 games. Okay, you're allowed to play these next 80 games, but now you got to sit again? I don't understand that. That makes no sense. If you're suspended 80 games and it goes into the postseason, okay, then you can't play. But you're coming back to play 80 games and then you got to sit out? Who, like, what genius thought of that one? And it's still going on? That's got to be fixed. I know you want to have penalties against players, but that one is just stupid. 80 games is 80 games. Not 80 games and then like 20 more. But that's not the dumbest thing MLB has done. Although they are getting better with things, but they have the technology to do so much more, and they're just not putting it into play yet. Anyhow, Ekblad, his suspension, 20 games. He'll have two to go come playoff time. And then he's allowed to play. The NHL doesn't say, oh, no, you're ineligible. No, Ekblad will be back. And hopefully it will be for more than just two games. No suspensions on the Miami Heat, not that I know of. I know people thought that Ja Morant might get suspended after doing the whole air gun thing last night. He didn't get suspended. He got fined $75,000. But the Miami Heat, oh, they were so close last night. They're not going to have any suspensions that I know about going into the playoffs. But will they be going into the playoffs? That is definitely a topic today and has been in South Florida. There was a chance they would actually win the division. Maybe they win last night. They didn't. They creep that much closer to winning the division. But winning the division in the NBA doesn't mean anything. They just go by record. So, like, why even have divisions? Like, oh, yeah, the Heat are division winners. Okay, but you're still in the play-in tournament. So, it doesn't really matter. It's just for record purposes, and you're moving ahead of some other teams. Somebody did send me a message, though. I think it was yesterday before the Heat game. The Heat, actually, this was 2 days ago. The Heat were 40-1 to win the division. Only a handful of games left, but still 40-1. It's a pretty good price. Unfortunately, they lost last night, because if they won, then it would have gotten really interesting. They had a 10-game losing streak not that long ago. And now, well, they'll be in the play-in tournament, but people believe, and rightfully so, maybe the Heat could do something. It's a much different conversation we're having now than we were 3 weeks ago. Okay, I have a lot to get to this hour. It's a Friday. Everybody should be on their way home if you're not home already. The weekend is upon us. Chill out. Have some fun. Don't do anything stupid. Obviously, you're not right now because you're tuned into me, and that is far from stupid. But I got many things to tell you. So instead of just saying, hey, have yourself a great weekend, before you do that, I want you to hear what I've got for you this hour. I've got many things in front of me, but I can't get to any of them until this hour officially begins.
It's time to shuffle up and deal.
I was at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood last night, and I was done playing in the charity poker tournament. I went into the Plum Lounge, sitting there at the bar, which I normally don't do because I'm a table kind of guy, not a bar kind of guy. But I was sitting there at the bar, and I'm watching the end of the Miami Heat game. Probably saw the majority of the fourth quarter. I thought it was a thrilling game. Now, some of you might say, come on, Slater, they lost. We don't celebrate thrilling games or moral victories. We're not going to celebrate losing here. I'm with you on that. I know it's a results-based industry, anything having to do with sports. And the Miami Heat last night, while it was a thrilling game, they lost. But that doesn't mean I'm coming on here right now and I'm going to go off on the Miami Heat. Why would I do that? That was 3 weeks ago. That was a month ago. I saw a lot of potential with what the Heat did last night and in the previous six games. I know on the last play, Mitchell's job was to lock up Ja Morant. You want to make his life tough on that court. The Grizzlies, they run good offense. They get a screen. Mitchell switches off of Morant, leaving it to Ware. Ja realizes the mismatch. He recognizes it because he's a really good player. May not make the smartest decisions like, you know, putting an air gun up there. Gets fined $75,000 for that. But he did what a star does. And then the next thing you know, the game is over. It was a tough one to take. I mean, I'm sitting there at the bar, not drinking, just eating. Not that there's anything wrong with drinking at a bar. And I'm watching it. I see Ja put up that shot. And you know, okay, is it going to go in? Is it going to roll around, go out? And you could just tell it was going in. And that's what happened. It was tough. I let out an audible, not an obscenity, but I was like, because it's a tough one to take. The Miami Heat were on a six-game winning streak. And less than 24 hours before tip time, the Heat were in Boston taking care of business as an 11-point dog against the Celtics. And despite the short turnaround, the Miami Heat went toe-to-toe with Memphis, a Western Conference playoff team. The Heat were right there with them. Why were they right there with them? Well, Tyler and Bam were both cooking last night. Both had outstanding games. They were super assertive on the offensive end. They got the ball. They went to the basket. They attacked. Tyler and Bam, they've got to be the Miami Heat's best players almost every single night. If this team's going to make any kind of noise, they better be. Because we're in the post-Jimmy era now. And the two best players on the Miami Heat are Bam and Tyler. Those are the Heat's bucket getters. And come playoff time, your stars have to be stars. Let's be real. In terms of 1-2 punches around the league, where you're talking about stars and all-stars, Tyler and Bam, they are the Heat stars, but they're not NBA stars compared to other players. Like Tyler and Bam, that combo isn't up there with others around the league. Tyler and Bam essentially are excellent role players. And with Jimmy gone, they've been thrusted into bigger roles. Well, they're capable, but that's not the Heat's plan. Like, their goal wasn't, okay, we want to make Tyler and Bam our two biggest stars. I would imagine if this season ends in the play-in round or tournament, whatever you want to call it, if they get knocked out of that, Pat Riley, he and his staff, they've got to do an assessment of this team. And if they're like I am here on this show and they're all about honesty, well, they're going to look under the hood of the car and something's going to jump off of the page. Hey, we don't have enough star power. They didn't replace Jimmy's impact offensively or defensively. I think we can all see that. You got to do something about it. If something isn't right with your car, like your car's just running okay, not the way it's supposed to be, but just okay, well, don't you want to make it run better? You would think so, but then again, some of you, and this may be what the Heat might do, I hope not, they might just say, okay, well, you know, it's running. I mean, we're able to get on the turnpike and go fast. I don't know if that was the best example, but I like using the turnpike with some analogies. Because a lot of us are on the turnpike all the time. I've been driving so much, I got one of those SunPass recharges the other day. Like, we refilled your account. I'm normally flying on American Airlines. I'm not driving a whole lot. But those 2 weeks that I was here consecutively for the tennis tournament at Hard Rock Stadium, I was driving everywhere. I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, SunPass still works. The Miami Heat's plan, though, it's got to be better. I will give Eric Spoelstra credit, not that he cares. Oh, Slater gave me credit today. Oh my gosh, thank you so much. But look, the Heat were on a six-game winning streak. They were this close to having it get to seven, but it was snapped last night. And when the Heat were on that losing streak of 10 games, you could tell in Spo's eyes he was just wearing those losses. He's a Hall of Fame coach. He constantly talks about being a competitor. And when you lose 10 games in a row, which was the longest losing streak of his career, that has got to just, like, kill you inside. You don't work your way up from the video room to Pat Riley's most trusted coach by just chance. You got to be good. You got to have that competitive edge. Losing 10 straight, having this group being associated with his worst record-wise coaching season, it has to hurt. And that's why, to me, the 6-game winning streak right after losing 10 in a row meant something, because this team started to fight. And that is a credit to the head coach. Dropping in the standings, being 10th in the East, knowing that you've got to win back-to-back road games just to get into the playoffs, it would have been very easy to throw in the towel. And then you lose 10 in a row. Like, come on, we're done here, guys. I kind of threw in the towel here on the show, but that's not the first time I've done that. I've thrown in a lot of towels. There's a lot of laundry to do around here. Eric Spoelstra kept his guys committed. He kept them to working hard. And the results started to show. This team kept trying. Even in the loss, second night of a back-to-back, a really good Grizzlies team in town, they pushed them to the limit. They pushed them to the last second. They ran into a really good player who made a buzzer beater. It happens. Maybe not in the NCAA tournament this year, but it happened last night in downtown Miami. Next season, Spo's got to find a way to get some more W's early, because those W's come in handy. This time of the year, this is a squad when you're trying to dig yourself out of a hole that you created yourself as an organization. It's not easy to do. You got to pile up those W's early. The Miami Heat, they essentially position themselves for the play-in tournament, which is not good. Given the expectations around this basketball team and organization and some of the talent that they've got, you got to start off better than they did. And we know a lot of it, or almost all of it, had to do with Jimmy. He torpedoed the season, and not with a bat. Can't believe Yahoo Sports now has icons for torpedo bats. I have Anthony Volpe on my fantasy team. And I looked at his name on my lineup, and there's this icon. I'm like, what is that? It says torpedo bat. They're showing you now who uses a torpedo bat. And a lot more players are starting to use them. Speaking of a lot of players, my poker tournament is coming up Tuesday night, April 15th, 11 days from now. $50,000 guaranteed in the prize pool. It's the Slater Scoops Poker Tournament, Tuesday night, April 15th at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood. You do not want to miss it. This is the biggest one we've had yet. $50,000 minimum up for grabs. The buy-in is only $250. That's a heck of a value for a tournament, one-night tournament. You don't have to show up 3 or 4 days in a row. The tournament starts 6 p.m. Tuesday night, April 15th. You've got until 9:30 p.m. to get there that night. So you got plenty of time if you get out of work late because your boss just makes you work too much or you got to sit in some traffic. You got until 9:30 p.m. Tuesday night, April 15th to get there. You do not want to miss it. $50,000 minimum in the prize pool. It's the Slater Scoops Poker Tournament, Tuesday night, April 15th in the poker room at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood. You know what I want to do right now? I almost just dropped my pen, and I love this pen. So it's not drop my pen. That's not what I wanted to do right now. I want to talk some baseball. I'm talking baseball. Because I love talking baseball. I'm a huge baseball fan. If I told you that heading into the Marlins' first road trip, that they would face Atlanta, and one team would be 4-3, the other team would be 0-7. How many of you would have written down that the Marlins would be the 4-3 team and the Braves would be the 0-7 squad. None of you would have written that. There's no way. It's like one of these questions on a game show, like the easiest possible choice. The first question you have. 7 games have been played. One team is 4-3, the other's 0-7. Your choices are Atlanta and Miami. Everybody is filling out Atlanta being 4-3 and the Marlins being 0-7. But that's not the case. The worst team in Major League Baseball right now is the Atlanta Braves, and the Marlins are above 500. Sure, it's way too early to make any crazy proclamations. The Braves, yes, they could still finish 20 games ahead of Miami. It's possible. But what a horrible start by Atlanta. So now the Marlins are in Atlanta. It's their first road trip of the season. They had a very nice homestand. I mean, maybe they're not thrilled how it ended against the Mets, but still, they're above 500. The Braves are a mess. The Marlins aren't a mess right now. Why not try to get a few more games ahead of them? These games in April count just as much as the games in September. It's the regular season. It's the standings. Keep climbing. Hey, it's way better to be playing the Braves right now than it'll probably be in the middle of the summer. Because once they start to figure everything out, they're not going to be horrendous. They're not going to finish the worst team in baseball. I don't think so. They got way too much talent in that clubhouse. Are they off to a bad start? Yes. But is it a lost season after 7 games? Absolutely not. But while you have the Braves just reeling, go ahead and take advantage of that. Improve your record if you're Miami. You don't want to be 500 after tonight. Go to 5-3. Let's go. Make the Braves 0-8. Pile up these W's. I was just talking about it with the Heat in the previous segment. If they would have piled up some W's early, they wouldn't be in this spot necessarily where they may have to win 2 road games. I don't know if that first game will be on the road or not, but still, why even put yourself in that spot? So hopefully we get some more Marlins W's this weekend. I didn't bet on the under. I'm glad I didn't. I did predict that they would only win, I think, 53 games. Gosh, I hope I'm wrong. I hope they win 93. I hope they surprise us. I want all of our teams to do well. I want to go to more Marlins postseason games. Let's go. Beat the Braves. Take advantage of their horrendous start. And I think the Marlins could. Why not? I mean, everybody else is. Although they were just playing the Dodgers, who the Dodgers are just unbelievable. What can you say? A lot of talent. But, hey, the Marlins have their former first base coach. And, look, they're 4-3. Maybe the guy knows something, or maybe this means nothing at all. I'm going to talk more about Calais Campbell and him going to Arizona, no longer being in Miami. I'll do that with Clay Ferrero in just a moment. But before I bring him on, because this segment's got to be really short, my final segment of the hour, I'm going to have a conversation with Clay. The first segment of the hour was very long. I try to give you like a nice sandwich. The bread is really thick on the outsides. This is a terrible example. And the meat is thin because the meat's supposed to be the good stuff. So that's not a good example. Scratch that. Because if I had that kind of sandwich, I would never go back. But people were asking me last night about Calais Campbell leaving. And I'm just like, that's a big loss. Not just on the field, but more off the field. That's my main concern. And I went into that a lot earlier this week, if you want to go back to the podcast and listen to it. But I'll get more into the Calais Campbell leaving the Miami Dolphins talk, and I'll do that with Clay Ferrero next. Here on this Friday, Clay Ferrero from WPLG Local 10 with us on the Andy Slater Show. Clay, I know you're into the Miami Heat. You tweet about them all the time. How much longer do you think you'll be tweeting about Heat games? Are we talking about mid-April, end of April, mid-May? Where are we?
I mean, I'm going all the way to mid-June and the pots and pans and the NBA Finals run that is coming and the unprecedented streak. No, I do think it's been really encouraging to see how they've been able to kind of turn things around a bit. And I don't think it's a fluke. I really don't. I don't think that beating that many teams in a row by that many points is fluky. Now, with that said, I also think we have to be realistic about what the ceiling is for this team. And, you know, but I do think it's encouraging, and it makes you think that there is a chance that this team can put things together and scare somebody or potentially even win a first round series if the matchup looks right.
What does it say to you, though, Clay, when you lose 10 in a row and then you win 6 in a row and so close to 7?
Well, I think to me it says that, you know, you've added quite a few new pieces and you're trying to figure out what everybody's role is there. And by the way, the biggest piece that you added hasn't even been playing over the last few games in Andrew Wiggins. I do think it says a lot about Tyler Hero's growth. And, you know, you've had kind of this push and pull with him this season where he's been the number one option, and then teams kind of figure out what he's doing, and then he has to adjust, then they adjust, and then now he's adjusting again. I think all of that has been encouraging, you know, and I think you can be excited about all of that and also be realistic about what the potential ceiling is with this team because of the lack of a true number one alpha like they had with Jimmy Butler. And all that's okay. And I think you can like some of the things you've seen with the younger players and then also kind of see what that means for the future and moving forward and what you need to turn this into, you know, turn this from a feel-good story into something that could be bigger down the line.
Clay, when they were on that losing streak, Spo was saying after every game he sees things. You know, he sees them coming together and all they're doing is losing. Then they win 6 in a row and they almost won last night. Does that make you feel, Clay, like, okay, Spo really did see things and he really is correct?
I think he definitely saw moments of growth, and I think you could see them in game as well. I think the thing, though, that was just so massively frustrating was the blowing big leads. And that, to me, for a while, that felt like it was a DNA thing. It just felt like, man, no matter what happens with this team, they're going to find a way to lose. And then over the last few games, that hasn't been the case. And I understand last night there's going to be this, oh, well, you're in another close game. You know, the other ones were all blowouts, and you know, you're finally in another close game, and you lose it. But I kind of looked at last night like, hey, second night of a back-to-back, you've won 6 in a row, you're playing a good team, a team that's in this weird, desperate place after their head coach was fired. I was okay with that. This isn't like a participation trophy thing. It was a, hey, okay, that was a game where both teams looked good. That was not the Miami Heat team that we were seeing 3 weeks ago. That was a team that, you know, could potentially do something in the playoffs. And look, when I say that, I'm not trying to be unrealistic about who this team is, but we also do know that there is a track record with Eric Spoelstra that if you get in, that you it really does become a game by game thing, and you can give teams a lot of nervous moments if you've got the right matchup.
As an organization, though, Clay, do you like where do you think the Heat would be best off this year, organizationally, moving forward in the future?
You mean as far as like, well, you know, tanking versus?
I mean, like in the end, do you think it's going to benefit them if they do get to the first round and lose? Do you think it would benefit them to lose in the play-in tournament and then, you know, be in the lottery? Just if you could pick.
I think you have to be honest about who you are. And I don't think that's results-based, really. I mean, unless you go and win the NBA Finals and then you're like, oh my goodness, Andrew Wiggins, like he's the NBA Finals MVP from a couple years, even though Steph Curry won the award, Wiggins was great in that series. Like, if you somehow, I'm trying to take everything into account, but I do think that, let's say you do, I don't think there's a massive difference to me in, you know, getting swept in the first round versus like squeaking out a series because you find something against the Cavs that you can pick at. I think you have to be realistic about who you are. And unless there's some massive sweeping elevation that like makes you think, oh man, like Bam and Tyler can be co-number ones and Andrew Wiggins is like this third potential number one, you have to look at your roster and say, who are we really? So I'm saying all that because as long as you don't get too enamored by one or two wins in the playoffs, I do think there's a benefit to Kolarov and if Jovic can come back and some of these younger guys getting that experience and being in those moments. Now, with that said, don't fall in love with the possibility there. If you get into the off season and you're honest with yourself and you're like, okay, well, we still need that massive alpha number one guy, go get him. Don't fall in love, because we've seen that happen with this organization in the past, where they fell in love with the 30-11 run at the end of the season with Dion Waiters and James Johnson. Don't do that. But I don't think that's necessarily results based unless you end up going on some crazy run to the NBA Finals.
We know everyone has a chance. If you're playing a game, you've got a chance. But do you really believe the Heat have any chance, Clay, against Cleveland?
I don't know. I just think that there's this. No,
well, that's
yes,
a
I
no.
do. No. If the answer is I don't know, I think it's a yes. If we're talking about is there a chance? I mean, yeah, there's a chance. You could get out there and Darius Garland twists his ankle in the first
game.
Oh,
now
and
we're
Evan
hurting
Mobley.
People. I mean, come
I'm
on.
telling you, what did we think that? Did we think the Heat had a chance when they were the eighth seed a couple of years ago to go to the NBA Finals? I don't think you can completely summarily dismiss stuff. But I also think that you have to be honest at the end of what that really means. And that's where, like, this is what I'm trying to say. You might win a first round series, but how does it happen? What do you look like? Do you really think that after that series, you have a core that is going to win an NBA championship? And if the answer is no, and you can be honest with yourself, then go get somebody who can be a part of that core. If the answer is yes, and it's going to take a lot for me to believe that it is, then okay, then that's another story. But right now, as you asked me today, I would love to see the young guys get the experience in the playoffs, but then also them to sit down at the end of the season, Pat Riley and Andy Ellisberg and Adam Simon, and say, okay, this is who we are, this is who we're not, and go out and get who we need to get to the place that we want to get to, because I don't think this roster is there.
Clay Ferraro from WPLG Local 10 with us here on the Andy Slater Show. One more thing I want to ask you, Clay, and I want to move to football here. Calais Campbell going to Arizona.
Oof.
Should Dolphins fans, I think you just gave me your answer, should Dolphins fans look at that move as something to worry about? And if so, why?
Well, yes, on two fronts. I mean, apparently, depending on who you, I think it was Omar Kelly who said he confirmed a report that the Dolphins had the third best offer on the table behind Arizona and I think Baltimore. To me, that says two things. Number one, why? Why are you not paying that guy? If you've got Tua, if you've got Tyreek Hill at a point in his career where, we could argue whether he's at the back end of his prime, if he's starting to decline, whatever. Like, there has to be a sense of urgency in that room. And for you to let Calais Campbell walk, if you let him walk because of money, now, if it was a case where you weren't going to be able to get him anyway because he didn't want to be a part of the situation anymore, and I haven't seen that, but that's a completely different story if that's the case. But if it's a difference between $1.5 million, $2 million to get him back when you have such a massive need at the position, I don't, it just feels like this organization doesn't have a direction. Like, you're either all in on now or you're not. And if you're not, then why aren't you looking to make some other moves to try to push stop taking all this cap hit stuff? Now, I don't know where they're at. I don't know what their direction is. And I thought, to me, it felt like the whole time, okay, we still got Tyreek Hill. We still got, let's try to go and get it this year. And we've got a quarterback that we think is a franchise quarterback, and we're paying him like one. So then why do you let a guy who was the core, the leader in the locker room on defense, why do you let him go when he was still, I want to say he was either the fourth or the sixth best defensive lineman, Pro Football Focus? How? Why? Why would you let a couple million dollars step in the way? I just, that one to me, of all the moves this offseason, that one just felt really bad. And it makes me wonder if maybe they're not all in. Maybe they're not sold that Tua is a franchise quarterback. Maybe they do want to just kind of go halfway this year and see if they can pull something off, and then maybe they'll pull the plug and start another rebuild next offseason. But it really made me wonder what they feel about this team, this roster, and this coaching staff.
You know, you said it's worrisome on a couple of fronts, and I'm kind of surprised, Clay, you didn't bring up the leadership front.
Oh, I did.
I mean, I know you mentioned leadership, but as far as what's going to happen with this team now without him there in that locker room and picking other people up, you know, mentally.
No, I think it is. And that's why I don't understand not paying him. I don't like if you had now. If you felt like he was going to leave anyway, then that's another problem. Then that speaks to maybe there's a deeper problem. But that's all speculation. But to me, what his value that he brought, not just as a player, but as a leader, you're telling me he's in your building, he's in your locker room, and you're going to make the third best offer? And the other offers are Arizona and Baltimore, two places where he's played. Like, everywhere he's gone, everybody loves him, and he is – Why do you let him go? I'm with you. I didn't mean to minimize the leadership thing. I think it is a massive problem, and it has me seriously questioning where this organization is heading this offseason.
Yeah, I just thought, I mean, I know you mentioned it. I just thought that would be like one of the focus points because Tyreek Hill is supposedly a leader, and he wanted to quit on his team, or he did quit on his team.
So. Well, it is a bit the only reason why I didn't go all in the leadership stuff mm-hmm. to begin with because the money issue popped up. Like, to me, like, let's say the money were equal and then Calais Campbell chose to go somewhere else. Then you're like, man, something must be really wrong in that locker room if he's leaving and going. So and look, I know he loves Arizona and all that stuff. But when you find out that the Dolphins didn't even have the best offer on the table, then I question why. Then I question the front office. Like, where do you think this team is? Why would you let him? It is a massive need position. Not just the human being, but the player and the position. I just, Andy, that one to me, of all the moves that the Dolphins have made over the last couple of seasons or lack thereof, it has me questioning. I don't know what they're doing right now.
It's puzzling because we don't know the exact answer, you know, as to the reason and what they're doing. Well, the draft will be coming up soon. I guess we'll get some answers. Probably not. Clay Ferraro from WPLG Local 10. I appreciate the time. It's always good to have you on, and have yourself a great weekend.
No problem, bud. Take care.
All right, you too. Clay Ferraro from WPLG Local 10. It was very puzzling. I mean, there could be several reasons. We don't know the exact reason. You hear reports and everything. But losing Calais Campbell, whether it's over $1 million or $2 million, or Calais just doesn't want to be with the Dolphins anymore. As I was saying earlier this week, it brings up not only an on-the-field issue, but a locker room and leadership issue. Because now the Dolphins are missing a true leader. All right, that's all the time I got for this Friday afternoon. I hope all of you enjoy your weekend. For now, I'm Andy Slater, and I'll see you later.